104.5 The Zone.
In Nashville, Tennessee, pal, I'm the man.
This is Squared Circle Radio.
Welcome to the Kevin Owens Show.
The latest news and commentary on the world of professional wrestling.
They make sure you ain't booty.
And now, Squared Circle Radio.
The face that runs the place.
With your main eventers, Jason Martin, David Reed, and Brandon Hagerty.
Good Sunday morning to you. Welcome in Squared Circle Radio on the air here on 104.5 The Zone. My name is Jason Martin. I'm joined by Brandon Hagerty, David Reed, with a week off. Probably going to be off for a couple of weeks, unfortunately, but we'll be obviously keeping him in our thoughts and prayers. He's got some back surgery coming up. Not going to be particularly fun. I still bet you he's better off than WWE is as a result of the Super Showdown, which we will be discussing for the vast majority of this hour. And last week I was in Los Angeles and I heard the program on the way back, on the flight back, and I listened to the Jon Moxley, the second part. I'd heard the Jericho part, but I heard the Wade Keller stuff, and that was eye-opening. And the Brock Lesnar portion in particular was fascinating listening, and what he had to say about social media, which I actually played on the air on the Big Six earlier this week as well. I think Moxley's kind of done talking now. I think he needed to get it all out of his system and pretty much did. And from that point on, seems like things are going all right for Mr. Moxley as he went to New Japan and became the, what is it, sixth U.S. champion
and
in the
first,
history of NJPW, beating Juice Robinson.
Now, obviously, it's a fairly new championship, only been around for a couple of years in New Japan. I think, what was it, Cody was the first U.S. champion over in New Japan. But Jon Moxley becomes the first man to ever hold both the New Japan U.S. Championship and the WWE U.S. Championship.
Yeah, and they ran that on Access on Friday night, as well as the final of the Best of the Super Juniors, which many are calling the match of the year.
The Will Ospreay match?
Yes. They made Moxley was mega over, like huge superstar level over, and then him and Juice Robinson proceeded to kill each other, which is what you kind of would have expected.
Which Moxley, I think that's going to be the style. I think that's going to be the Moxley style. He's got a match at Fighter Fest later this month, the next All Elite Wrestling show.
Is that going to be Janela?
With Joey Janela.
And they're going to kill
those
each other.
Those two dudes are going to absolutely kill each other.
Yeah, and I saw some people, I think it was Meltzer actually wrote this and said, look, like a minute into that match with Juice Robinson, Mox was just pouring sweat. And that's a thing that happens a lot of times when you leave WWE, is your work rate, either you live on the fact that you were the old Dean Ambrose and you just cash a check, or you go out and you feel like, I've got something I've got to go prove. That's what Moxley clearly is trying to do right now. So he's working harder than he's worked in years, basically, because he's never been asked to do this in WWE as Dean Ambrose. And now he's in tights. You know, wear regular wrestling gear, which is a little different.
It's going to take a little bit of getting used to.
It is.
I do like the style of those trunks.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the kind of short shorts style of trunks, almost even more so than just, you know, regular trunks. He's got the barbed wire, I think, on one of the legs, which is pretty good. Pretty nice choice for the Jon Moxley character.
Yeah. So good for him. And everything should be rolling along pretty well, I would say. He's going to be in the G1, and that was sort of expected. And I'll tell you, by the time AEW finally rolls onto TNT, he's going to be just as big a star, if not more, and more people are going to be paying attention to him, because what we're going to get to see this Moxley character do is what he wanted to do as Dean Ambrose for such a long time. Now, I would argue that some of the things that I heard him mention in the podcast, the Keller podcast, some of the ideas he wanted to do obviously wouldn't have flown in WWE, like bleeding half to death and some of that stuff. Some of the other stuff made a lot of sense. I liked what he was saying that he wanted to do with Brock. And I love that he talks about how, look, I know it came across like I was burying Brock, but I really wasn't. And then he buried Brock again. That story did not reflect well on Brock Lesnar at all. Even if you agree to some extent that Brock what he wanted to do made sense, meaning what Brock did not want him to do, that Brock was actually right in certain capacities.
It also seemed like a lot of the faults for the quality of that match needs to be thrown at the feet of creative WWE-wise, because it did seem like, and Moxley made it seem like, Brock Lesnar was into some of the ideas and then would never hear anything back. Now, you could argue that maybe Brock said, here's what Dean wants to do, I don't want to do it, and got it buried, or it just went to the feet of creative and they ignored it.
Yeah. They certainly didn't set it up like it mattered. And then he told the deal about how Strowman was going to come in and do the cash and the Shield was going to come out that night at SummerSlam, and they ended up coming out the night after because Brock basically ixnayed that and made Braun look like an idiot in the process. They could have fixed that by not having Braun come out. I don't know if the Shield coming out and that would have been kind of a heel move for them to attack Braun Strowman as a pack in that moment. I feel like that night Roman just needed to beat Brock Lesnar, and they didn't even need Braun Strowman out there to add. It was weird that he just walked to the back that night. A lot of people don't even remember that, but that was the night Roman actually did beat Brock Lesnar, and they went, as soon as that thing was over, they were done with that show. It was like 30 seconds of him on the post, and then we're out. We're done. We'll see you tomorrow. And then the Shield did their thing the next night on TV. So there was a lot of fascinating stuff there. Super Showdown took place in Jeddah.
Not Saudi Arabia. That's the most hilarious thing to me about the run-up to this show, is that WWE, I'm assuming because of all of the criticism they got the last time they did a show in Saudi Arabia, basically decided that the promotion for Super Showdown was not going to include the words Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Because apparently they think their audience is too dumb to realize where Jeddah is.
Yeah. They mentioned Saudi Arabia on the show.
Yeah, but not in the promotion
right.
leading up.
Not at all. And yes, we're well aware that Jeddah is not a country. We know exactly what's going on here. It was 94 degrees. The real feel in the ring was over 100 degrees. Every single person that flew over there was jet lagged beyond belief.
That's a ridiculous
flight. They're sweating half to death out there in the ring. And guess what? This show sucked.
And you had to, like, poor Natalya and Alexa Bliss.
Oh, my gosh.
Who had to get on a plane and fly, what is it, 17, 18,
whatever.
20 hours, however long it takes to get from here to Saudi Arabia, just on the hope that the Saudi royal family was going to allow them to wrestle when they get there.
Spoiler alert.
WWE had not worked this out beforehand. There had been discussions, but you hadn't gotten an answer from the Saudi royal family on whether or not these two women could actually wrestle. But let's bring them on this trip just in case. And as you mentioned, spoiler alert, they were not allowed.
Not only were they not allowed to wrestle, they weren't allowed to appear on the show, nor was WWE permitted to say, in the future, we're hoping women... They couldn't even say that. The government shut down all of that. And then there was the speculation that if they did work, they were going to be made to work in suits that were head to toe covered. I mean, this whole thing is so ridiculous.
Sasha Banks, I can't even remember what country they were in, but Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss a couple of years ago became the first women's wrestlers to wrestle in this Middle Eastern company or this Middle Eastern country. And they were made, like, they could show their hair, obviously, but from like the neck all the way down, long sleeves, everything, they couldn't show anything else.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was a farce. I'm not surprised they didn't get to wrestle. I feel sorry that they had to travel. It was weird that those were the two that were picked also. I don't know what that indicates,
maybe
or maybe nobody else would have done it, or
maybe everybody else turned it down.
I mean, Kevin Owens said no. There was one group that was doing like live blogging and kind of doing live commentary on Friday during the show. I don't remember who it was, Russell Talk or somebody like that. And I guess you paid like $5 or something to listen to them do it. And all the money that they raised, they gave to Sami Zayn's Syrian Foundation to kind of counter what WWE was doing by, hey, don't watch Super Showdown. Pay us. We'll tell you about it as it's happening, and we'll do this to thwart what they're doing, which I think is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, Sami Zayn was actually going to launch that charity aspect during the show on Friday, and then it got delayed. I'm wondering why it got delayed.
Yeah.
I think we know. But anyways, Ali, I keep wanting to say Mustafa Ali.
Of course you do.
Because it makes sense?
Yeah.
Because it sounds good?
Yeah, sounds good.
Mustafa Ali, let's just go with it. Said on Twitter after the show on Friday that he was donating every dime that he got from that appearance to charity. Finn Balor, if you saw him on social media on Friday, posted a picture of himself on the ramp at Super Showdown in a equality shirt and said, Happy Pride Month from Saudi Arabia.
Sure they appreciated that if they saw it at all. But not only were there the obvious things that kept us from watching this show, and I still have never seen the Crown Jewel show. The only one I saw was the Greatest Royal Rumble. But what are these shows known for? They're known for two things. One, nothing of note. And two, botches. The Greatest Royal Rumble, what's the one thing you remember from that show?
Titus O'Neil.
Correct. Crown Jewel, the hairpiece getting pulled off and Triple H's quad injury or whatever it was that happened to him, or no, it was his arm or whatever.
Yeah, the one thing that I have watched, it was, yeah, the pectoral muscle.
I've seen two GIFs.
The one thing I actually did go back and watch the tag match from Crown Jewel, because Shawn Michaels, I think on this show, you, me, and David would list Shawn Michaels probably in our top 3 to 5 wrestlers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably my number 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to watch that guy wrestle again. And that match, man.
It's an embarrassment. But that's the other thing that it's known for, is these like blasts from the past matches that have no business happening that nearly cause calamity. Triple H gets injured in the tag on the floor. And then we have Goldberg and The Undertaker on Friday. And Goldberg, like 30 seconds into the match, spears the post. Well, same way Chronic did 20 years ago, and he basically knocks himself out from that point on.
Goldberg, before the match even starts, does the whole dumb thing he's been doing for 20 years where he headbutts a door.
Yeah, which you don't even see. You
in
just
the locker
see him come
room.
Out.
Yeah, you see him walk out with like a dot of blood on his forehead because he just, like, how is this guy able to eat solid foods? Like, he's like over 50 at this point, and he's been doing this for 20 plus years now. And he's been throwing his head with just reckless abandon into corners, into turnbuckles, into concrete walls backstage for some reason, through doors.
Well, this is what happened.
This man is just concussion denier, man.
He knocked himself out with the thing into the post, which made him bleed more. And from that point on, it was a mess. It was bad. They're very lucky that both of them are not hurt or worse. You saw a tombstone. There's only one other tombstone that I remember like it.
Owen Hart?
Correct. On Stone Cold Steve Austin. And not to be outdone, Goldberg tried to go for the jackhammer and turned it into the coolest jackhammer I've ever seen, because it was a brain buster on an old man. Dropped him dead on his head, no pun intended. Undertaker was displeased after this match, the reports.
No,
Goldberg was very upset. He was just like, hey, I knocked myself out. I want to vindicate myself. Like, he wants to do it again and all this. And I'm thinking to myself, let me tell you what I thought as I heard about this match on Friday afternoon. Retire, Undertaker. And I know Meltzer keeps saying Bill's got a lot left. And after hearing that promo, he's like, he could go against any major heel. There's a ton of money still left in Goldberg. All this kind of stuff. Look, that match he had with Brock at Mania was really good. That was good Goldberg. I don't want to see Goldberg and Braun. I don't want to see Goldberg and Lashley. I don't want to see Goldberg and Lars. I don't think you have to worry about that. I think it's about time for both them boys to just appreciate it. Thank you for
everything.
Thank you for decades.
We'll see you at the Hall of Fame.
It was just And the other thing, you assumed it was going to be like a 2-minute match.
It went 8 minutes. It went 8.5 minutes.
That's still too long. That's like 6.5 too long.
Well, it was, you know, it was a lot less. It was like a third the time of what Triple H and Randy Orton put in on Friday. I'm sure we'll get into that. But you didn't need reports to tell you that Undertaker was displeased with this match, because as soon as he got the pin, he sits up and the look on his face is pure disgust. Like that picture is now a meme.
Yeah, that's like, right. I've seen it.
It is going to become the next great wrestling meme, because The Undertaker was not able to hide his displeasure with this match.
Yeah, well, you know how you don't have displeasure from that match? Don't take the money from Saudi Arabia and stay home.
Oh, The Undertaker's going to be doing these matches. WWE has a 10-year contract with the Saudi royal family. We're in year 2 of that. Undertaker's going to be 60 years old, main eventing shows in Saudi Arabia.
And I'm going to be 48 years old, still not watching them. We got a lot more coming up after the break. We got a lot left in the tank. We didn't watch this show, but I know all about this show. So we will talk about this show. You can tweet us at Zone Wrestling. I know some of you said it was a good show. I just want to tell you thoughts and prayers for your blindness. Be right back. Squared Circle Radio on 104.5 The Zone. Squared Circle Radio, 104.5 The Zone. Brandon Hagney, Jason Martin.
I just headbutted the wall back here, but luckily these things are padded.
I was going to try to do that for radio, and I realized it probably wouldn't work. It would also require a description, so I left it alone.
I think I scared 92Q.
So the booking on Friday was an atrocity. I will stop short of some of the wrestling journalists that said it was disastrous and it's killed off all these characters, because a whole lot of people didn't see this, bros. Like, it's not going to matter that much.
In the end, despite the fact that WWE dedicates about 4 weeks of their programming to building to this show, nothing on these shows matter.
Nah.
Nothing.
Nah.
We'll forget it by tomorrow.
Remember Braun won that Greatest Royal Rumble? They got that green title.
That has not been seen again.
Nah. That thing's been repurposed to the 24/7 title, and it's been won underneath a ring where a camera for some reason is placed.
It was actually won on the plane over to Saudi Arabia.
And it was won on a golf course where Jinder Mahal was in his gear.
Which, man, that's actually, as long as R-Truth is around this 24/7 championship, R-Truth should probably retire as a 54-time 24/7 champion. Yeah, this man should never be away from this title. If you want this title to work, and it's still, there's still a ceiling to how entertaining all of this stuff can be.
Truth's definitely apex of that.
Truth is the guy to get it to that.
I concur. I'm going to read this directly from Wikipedia as we talk about the booking here. We haven't even mentioned Shane McMahon yet. We're getting there. This is just incredible to me. After that, Lars Sullivan faced Lucha House Party in a 3-on-1 handicap match. Sullivan dominated most of the match until Lucha House Party took down Sullivan, causing them to be disqualified. So it was a 3-on-1 handicap match.
Was there weapons involved?
No. And the 3 Lucha members then took over on Sullivan and got disqualified.
They got disqualified?
That was the booking choice made in a 3-on-1 handicap match at the Super Showdown on Friday.
WWE loves to disqualify people for wrestling too much.
It's a handicap match. That implies one guy has a disadvantage before the bell even rings. He was dominating them. They came back on him, and as they did, that caused a disqualification. Let me tell you who that makes look really bad. Lars Sullivan. I don't care that much, although I am hearing and reading a lot of things that are saying that he's talked to all the right people. This is not the Hogan apology. People believe him. They feel like he's a changed man. All this. He's got a checkered past. Everybody deserves a second chance. Whatever. It was real bad, but apparently all the people that should be mad at him are not, and that they're kind of giving him a second look. But I'll tell you what this tells me. We were right about Lars Sullivan. This ain't going to last. This is not, like, what is this right now? This is a
That's been the problem all along with building Lars Sullivan as this just typical monster. The promo that he had on SmackDown with...
yeah, that didn't go well.
Can't remember who was it. I can't remember. The whichever backstage interviewer.
Yeah.
Caleb Broxton. I think it was Caleb Broxton. That promo that he had on Tuesday was just god-awful, and you could tell that every single word of that promo was written by someone that was not named Lars Sullivan.
Yep.
I never liked Lars Sullivan in NXT.
But at least
in NXT, they built him as this. They never really called him a monster. He was the freak. But I've said it on this show before. He was basically Beast from X-Men. Like, this guy would cut a promo, but it was like a very intelligent promo. And then when he got in between the ropes, he was just a monster. He was a beast. That has not been the Lars Sullivan that we have gotten on television thus far. They tried to do that a little bit with that promo on Tuesday. I think they failed spectacularly. But that's the problem with just building Lars Sullivan into this typical monster, because WWE has a lot of monsters on their roster.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Braun Strowman. Heck, they even have like a Drew McIntyre. Obviously,
Bobby Lashley.
All of these people are bigger than Lars Sullivan.
Yep.
Like, if you see a picture with Braun Strowman standing next to Lars Sullivan, he is a good 5 to 6 inches taller.
That's why you see Lars Sullivan with Lucha House Party.
Because those are the people on the roster that he is significantly bigger than.
Yep.
And once you get him out of this space where he's wrestling cruiserweights, you're going to find that he's not bigger than... He's 3 inches shorter than Randy Orton.
And he's not a main eventer. He is low mid-card heel missing link for people that are old enough to know who I'm talking about. And none of us were fans. We didn't get it. We felt like we were in the minority because it seemed like all of the wrestling media, or a lot of them, were really behind Lars. We didn't get it, and we said, you're going to have to prove it to us. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's off to a glowing start, but it doesn't look like it has anywhere to go.
Like, the only thing you could say about Lars in terms of size, like, he is a thick dude. Like, this dude is, but
yeah,
like...
he's wide, yeah.
But so is Big E. And Big E doesn't get built like a monster.
And Big E's awesome and charismatic. And could be a main eventer if they wanted him to be. Finn and Andrade had a good match that apparently took place in a library. Because there was no pop whatsoever at any point, no matter what they were doing.
Because both of those guys debuted after the year 1997?
Yeah, no one knows who they are. Like, no one in the crowd had any clue who they were. Roman Reigns and Shane McMahon... Shane apparently dominated the match itself, like took 95% of the match, and then won it after Drew came in at the end. So Roman hit like a Superman punch and a couple of counters. Roman had to sell the triangle. Shane dominated Roman Reigns and got the win. I don't care how it happened. He still walked out with a win over Roman Reigns. What are we doing with Roman Reigns? What are we doing with Shane McMahon?
Right. What are we doing with Shane
McMahon? What are we building Shane McMahon for right now?
Is the question. Like, over the last month on television, Shane McMahon has been built as the biggest star in the company.
That's the one thing that is still alive from the Saudi Arabia shows, is the best in the world moniker that Shane McMahon got at Crown Jewel.
This is a 49-year-old man with the cardio conditioning of an earthworm who turns the deepest shade of crimson after 90 seconds in a wrestling ring. That's being generous. Like, this man sweats as if he just walked out of a shower when he wrestles. And this man is being built. Like, the only person on television over the last month who has been built strongly has been Shane McMahon.
That's right. I mean, even better than like Becky Lynch at her best moments. Shane McMahon is like Hulk Hogan in 1989.
Seth Rollins wishes he had the booking of Shane McMahon right now.
If Dean Ambrose had been pushed like Shane McMahon, he never would have left WWE.
The only person who might have an argument for being built strongly, as strongly as Shane McMahon right now, is Kofi, who was on like a 16-match winning
streak. And that was a fluke and total luck. Well, like, that happened at all. This was like planned to some extent, I guess. Like, if you want to put a Mount Rushmore of WWE pushes over the past 30 years, you've got Stone Cold Steve Austin, you've got Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you've probably got The Undertaker.
And you might have John Cena somewhere.
Maybe you put Cena there.
I don't think Shane McMahon's on this Rushmore.
But I think that at this point, Shane has a chisel and he's working to knock one of those people off of Mount Rushmore to carve his own bust into it. It's ridiculous at this point. And we're doing it at the expense of Roman? And so what we're getting in Tacoma in 2 weeks. Yes, there's a pay-per-view in 2 weeks called Stomping Grounds. Great name, by the way.
At least it's not Great Balls of Fire.
Fair point. Is Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. Which...
Well, Shane just won this feud.
Right. Like, there's no rematch for Roman. Because Roman lost courtesy of Drew, he's going to go face Drew now. We already saw him face Drew at WrestleMania and on TV at least twice. Stomping Grounds is going to be passable grounds.
Like 80% of this card from Stomping Grounds is either a WrestleMania rematch, or a Money in the Bank rematch,
or a Super Showdown rematch. Yeah, we're not done talking about Super Showdown. We mentioned Kofi. We haven't talked about his match. And if you didn't know, Triple H and Randy Orton still happening. We will discuss, and we're going to go a little deep dive into Baron Corbin and what's happening with him, and maybe Seth Rollins' worst match on the main roster.
And yet another bait and switch.
We're not a bait and switch. We'll be right back. Square Circle Radio, 104.5 The Zone.
I have voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me.
Thought we could get the old Orton music there for a second, seeing how this was an old match.
He should have come out to Burning My Light.
I like Burning My Light. Square Circle Radio, 104.5 The Zone. Brandon Hagney at Hag Haney. I'm Jason Martin at J Mart Zone. David Reed out for a couple weeks, probably. So Randy Orton and Triple H happened, and we looked at the match times before we came on for Super Showdown, and all the singles matches on the card were 12 minutes or less. We already joked that Goldberg Undertaker went around 8.5, which was about 6.5 longer than it needed to, even if Taker was going to win, which he probably shouldn't have if one guy was going to actually do anything afterwards. But of course, Vince ain't putting WCW's like last shining beacon of hope over one of his greatest creations ever. That was not going to happen. But how long was Triple H and Randy Orton?
It was like 25 minutes, 38 seconds.
And didn't you know it was going to be like beforehand? Because
it's a Triple H match.
As smart as Triple H is to the business in terms of how he runs NXT and all of that stuff, he does not seem to be cognizant of less is more when it comes to his own wrestling matches. Him and Orton, I'm sure it was good. And I heard it was good, as a matter of fact. First off, I need Stephanie or Vince or somebody in the family buy this man an actual Harley.
Not this motorized tricycle?
So that he doesn't feel the need to cosplay Mad Max every single time he works. I mean,
maybe he just doesn't feel safe on an actual motorcycle.
I mean, I had a big wheel when I was like 7, and it was a General Lee Dukes of Hazzard big wheel, orange, that I ruined because I wanted to paint it black, and I did it with spray paint at my friend's house. Didn't realize, oh, that's not going to work as well as I assumed. That big wheel was cooler than what Triple H has rolled to the ring in the last 3 WrestleManias and I guess Super Showdown now.
My man is 48, 49 years old, and every big match he has is like the opening credits to Bobby's World.
The motorcycle gimmicks look like they need flags on the back of them, like Sweet Chuck in Police Academy 3. Not Zed, not Bobcat Goldthwait, Tim Kazurinsky, folks. Like, it's utterly absurd. But he and Randy Orton worked for 26 minutes, and I'm sure somebody enjoyed that. Seth Rollins.
We didn't watch the show, and we have made that very clear.
We love the fact, and we even said it during the last break. It's awesome that we can sit here and talk to you about this show and bury it, having seen two GIFs of it and one still shot of the Undertaker's face.
Looking we did watch the botches
yes.
of the Undertaker Goldberg match.
All we have Jonathan to do is Hutton, read about it.
Jonathan Hutton sent those to us.
Yeah, he sent them to us in a text chain, and all we had to do was read about it to know. So let's talk about...
Well, I was going to say, your former colleague at Cage Side Seats, Sean Reuter.
Yeah.
I was just on Twitter scrolling right after I got home from work. It's about like 2 o'clock or whatever. And I see a tweet that says, "Why the bleep is this match still going?"
And I just knew what the match was.
I retweeted it from our account and I said, "I'm not even watching, but this is about the Triple H match, right?" Somebody needs to hold an intervention for Triple H, because this guy is going to have like an indelible, he's going to leave an indelible mark on professional wrestling just for what everything he's doing with NXT, everything he did in his actual career. You know, that special that they put on the WWE Network last week.
Right.
About his WrestleMania week. This dude has one of the greatest work ethics.
It's
extremely impressive.
He cares a lot.
And so we're going to just put that aside right now, because Triple H, the wrestler in 2019, is a problem. Triple H had the longest match at WrestleMania. Like, this dude went almost 30 minutes with Batista.
That match stunk. It was 50, so long.
A 52-year-old Batista and a 48, 49-year-old Triple H going for nearly half an hour at the biggest show that WWE has
and
every
three
year.
3 minutes into that match, he's got like a hole punch trying to take out Batista's nose. Trying to take his rings out of his nose.
Like, it was like that scene from The Wrestler where Randy the Ram Robinson wrestles Necro Butcher.
Yeah.
And there's like a staple gun involved.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they had to resort to in the Triple H Batista match, because neither of those two dudes have any business going half an hour in 2019. They don't have any business going half an hour in 2009.
Yeah. That's right. So that,
it just speaks to what Triple H thinks epic wrestling matches are. Like, extremely slow, extremely plodding, power move, sell, power move, sell. Like, it's something that I have been complaining about for months on this show. Like, this is what Triple H's
formula
is, like, especially post-2002 Triple H.
Yep, that's right. So this is a hypothetical question that just came to me. Who wins in a match between 2019 Shane McMahon and 2019 Johnny Gargano?
Oh, God. You have to drop a building on both of those guys.
They're still kicking out at 1.5. Johnny Gargano last takeover somehow kicked out, I think, of more stuff than he did the first time, and then he finally lost.
You can run over both of those guys with Triple H's tricycle and they'd kick out at 1.
I just want to know, how is it that Stephanie's like, yes? It's like, yeah, babe, you look awesome. How does she like laugh with her girlfriends when he rolls to the ring when she's not on the back of it? Because 90% of the time, she's on it as well.
I just, like, this dude saw Fury Road like 5 years ago, and it's like the last movie he's seen because he's working entirely too much. And so he just thinks that that's the height of pop culture.
I just can't believe he doesn't understand that him being out there that long in a match is not good. Has he not read anything anybody has written about that? If he just went out there and had 15-minute matches, nobody's going to have a problem with that. No. It's not like he doesn't know what he's doing and isn't good at it.
He's still in very good shape.
Yeah, he's great shape.
Like, we're talking about, you know, Undertaker at this point in his career. And Undertaker's only about, 4 or 5 years older than Triple H.
Yeah.
But the mileage that the Undertaker has kind of pales in comparison to what Triple H. Like, Triple H still looks like $1 million. And he could still move. And he still understands what his, like, he, I don't know. Like, just shave these things in half and he'd be fine.
That's all he would have to do, but he can't do it. I mean, to go there and go 26 on a card that had a 50-man battle royal that ended up with 51.
How does that happen?
How does the wild card that starts with 3 become however many people they feel like showing up at any given time? But, and that's basically amounted to is you see the same people on both shows, and it's all the main eventers, and all the people that would have benefited from being on a split brand aren't on TV at all.
That 50-man Battle Royal went about 17 minutes. Triple H and Randy Orton went almost 26. That was more than double every other singles match. More than double.
And the winner of the Battle Royal was Mansoor.
Who is that?
NXT superstar from Saudi Arabia.
Who is that?
I mean, I still don't know. Maybe he showed up at one of the other shows. I remember that first, the Greatest Royal Rumble, there were like four Saudi guys. They did like a deal with them in the ring. Maybe Mansoor is one of them. I have no idea.
You'll never see that guy outside of the context of these Saudi Arabia shows.
I mean, if there weren't the Saudi Arabia shows, that dude probably wouldn't be in NXT, right?
No.
It's unbelievable how they just like stop their business. And what an awful time for them to go promote this show when nobody's watching their TV and it's so bad. We haven't even talked about Baron Corbin yet. When we come back, we'll talk about Baron Corbin and Seth Rollins. And I'm trying so hard on this Firefly Funhouse thing. I just don't get it. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know how this is going to translate, even with the Vince McMahon devil puppet that Wade Keller actually appropriately said is actually a Pete Rose puppet when you actually look at it.
This might be the only time we disagree.
I want you to try and sell me on this. I'm trying so hard on this. We'll be right back. Squared Circle Radio on 104.5 The Zone. I feel like we should have just rolled with the Bobby's World theme. Coming back here in the final segment, I'm crying. I'm tearing up out of my left eye because Shane Train tweeted us a gift from the intro to Bobby's World.
And I'm just imagining Triple H on this tricycle.
I was thinking about it because we just heard that Pedal Tavern ad. Midday 180 is going to be doing their cool Pedal Tavern thing again in a couple of weeks. Make sure you listen to them. Get your chance to be a part of that. Or tweet him, but if Triple H came to the ring on a Pedal Tavern, it would be like 1,000 times cooler than anything he's done in the last 4 years of WrestleMania entrances.
It would be more intimidating.
Far more. But I don't know that I ever actually watched Bobby's World. I remember this intro, though. I think I might have been a little too old for it.
The classic, man. Like the Fox animated, like Saturday morning stuff.
I mean, X-Men was fire.
Bobby's World still is. Like, led into X-Men.
Yeah, what else? Do you remember the rest of it?
Like Spider-Man was around at that point.
The X-Men was the one that was like 11 a.m. I remember. Even friends of mine would be like, oh, we've got to plan whatever we're doing on Saturday around Fox Kids, X-Men. And that thing still holds up. It truly does.
It's better than what they're putting out right now with that franchise.
Yeah, we're not even going to talk about Dark Phoenix. I'm glad that they didn't even offer a screening to me for that. They didn't offer a screening period. Let me tell you what a giant red flag is these days. When you don't get that screening invite and there's not one anywhere just because they don't want a review out before that thing actually hits.
All right, so the Fox Kids lineup.
Oh, you got it. Awesome.
I'm not sure if it was like, these are just their offerings through the years because the Fox Kids property was like 12 years.
Yeah.
There was Bobby's World, the Tom and Jerry Kids Show, Beetlejuice.
Oh, I remember that.
Tasmania.
Never watched that.
Batman, the animated series.
That I own on Blu-ray, and it's phenomenal.
Eek the Cat?
All right.
Okay. X-Men. Perfect. Animaniacs.
Oh, yes.
Mighty Morphin Power
Rangers. Pinky and the Brain rolling on there, too?
Was Pinky? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
With Animaniacs. It was like back-to-back.
Yeah. The Tick.
Oh, yeah.
Life with Louie.
All right. They actually had some really good stuff. Like, that list is phenomenal right there. Not phenomenal was Seth Rollins and Baron Corbin. Which was nothing but nothing to lead to them having probably, now the cage match will probably be the main event. Kofi and Dolph will probably be the main event at Stomping Grounds. But the other choice would be, well, you're not going to do Becky and Lacey Evans. And by the way, Lacey Evans and Charlotte worked on Monday night on Raw in one of the worst matches.
Those two have no chemistry.
I have seen in years on TV. They tried to do a shoot-style match while none of them had any history in being able to do that at all. and it was disastrous.
I think Lacey Evans has potential.
She's not ready yet, though.
I think she has potential, but yeah, she is not ready at all. There's so many talented women on WWE's roster right now where that you don't need to rush someone like Lacey Evans.
And she has a cool story. They're not even using that. They've got her doing this. They've got her doing a gimmick or whatever, but she should be working 15-minute house show matches constantly, yep, just trying to get better, because I do think that she's got a lot of potential there. But this thing was absolutely dreadful. But Baron Corbin and
Seth Rollins,
yeah, was not good. And then it led to yet another cash in, non-cash in, bait and switch moment. The only thing, I hesitate to call it bait and switch only because who are the morons that have been buying this week after week? I don't understand the whole idea of it. I don't understand why the babyface is angry that the heel is not telling him exactly when he's going to cash in. That's reversed. Just like Dolph Ziggler asking for a cage match, the heel asking for a cage match to keep babyface interference out is also ridiculous. And we just did a cage match with The Miz and Shane McMahon not a month ago. And here we're going to do yet another one. And there's always interference in these matches.
Now, we had a couple of people that tweeted us on Monday when I said it. I called it yet another bait and switch. And they said, you know, no one really expected Brock Lesnar to cash in on Monday. Like, and that might be true. But at the end of the day, WWE is promoting Brock Lesnar is cashing in tonight.
Yeah, the one
and
thing,
then it doesn't happen.
Look, here's the thing. If Paul Heyman comes out and says, we're going to cash in, that's an angle. But when Michael Cole does it off the top and they have a graphic at the bottom of the screen that says breaking news, Brock Lesnar cashing in Money in the Bank tonight, that's false advertising. There's a difference between those two. When a character does it, it's a character doing it. When it's Michael Cole doing it, that's supposed to be the company saying this is going to happen.
And this was probably like the fourth straight week where they've done something similar. Now, these are not like cardinal sins.
No.
Like, I'm not trying to say that, you know, their business is going to tank because they're not delivering on some of these things. But if you remember like 3 or 4 weeks ago now, we had the fatal four-way on Raw to determine who was going to challenge Seth Rollins at Super Showdown,
yep,
eventually won by Baron Corbin.
Right.
But when that match was first announced and promoted, Baron Corbin wasn't even a part of it.
Yep.
It was AJ Styles.
Yep.
And they started promoting it knowing that AJ Styles was injured and knowing that AJ Styles was not going to actually be in this match. So you let this promotion stand out there that AJ Styles was going to be in this match. And it's not like they ran some sort of, they did run a bit of a gimmick where Baron Corbin beat him up backstage, but it wasn't like he got jumped backstage and that's why he wasn't able to compete in this match. They did an interview with him in the trainer's room where, you know, Caleb Braxton or Charlie Caruso, whoever it was, said, you're not competing tonight. And this was before Baron Corbin actually came in and jumped him. So, like, you basically let this promotion lay out there, and then as soon as the show started, AJ Styles isn't in this match anymore.
Yeah.
And then that leads into the next week where Brock Lesnar is supposed to announce when he's going to cash in his Money in the Bank.
Which is stupid anyway.
Which was stupid. But it did lead to a bit of a funny moment when he said, I have a year to do this,
funny,
and walked away.
That plays into Brock not caring and all of those kinds of things. I'm going to predict that he will cash in on the first SmackDown on Fox or to lead into it somehow. All right. Firefly Funhouse. I want to talk about Corbin. We'll wait till next week. Firefly Funhouse, please sell me on this. I watched it. I understand what the point of this skit was this week. I just don't get it. First off, I thought it went on way too long.
I still don't understand how this translates to a wrestling
ring. Me either.
I will agree with you there. But this is a 3-minute oasis.
I mean, it's intriguing.
In a desert of god-awfulness that we get from Monday. Like, that's what I look at Firefly Funhouse as. Like, it's something to look forward to because I know it's going to be something different. I know it's going to be something creative. And for the most part, it's going to be something fairly entertaining with all of this other garbage happening around it.
I don't know if I can call it entertaining. Just because it's different doesn't necessarily make it better.
Vince McMahon Devil Puppet was fun.
I mean, it was. And I guess it was like Vince McMahon ruined Bray Wyatt with the character that he put him through.
Well, he was basically, I mean, the pig puppet was Husky
Harris.
Yeah,
right, right.
And basically, he was more or less insinuating, I'm assuming, that Vince McMahon told him, if you don't lose weight, you're fired.
Right. I don't know where this is going. I don't know how this becomes a wrestler. I don't know what it looks like when it does.
You can buy a brace gym, though. You can buy that Wyatt gym shirt, though.
Can you really?
Yeah, on shop.com.
Is that the only thing that he's got right now, or have they got other stuff?
I think so.
I mean, the devil puppet is interesting, and I just keep looking at it, and I'm just like, I know Bray is doing really well with it. Like, I'm watching that, and I'm like, all right, he's giving his all to this.
It did seem like a couple of weeks ago when he debuted that clown mask. Like, I was like, okay, this is how we get him to the ring. But then they've kind of just, like, pumped the brakes on that a little bit.
I just don't get it. Like, I'm watching it, and I'm saying, I don't know what the purpose of what I'm seeing is. Now, I am intrigued enough to keep watching to see what it is, but every week I'm waiting for it to hit me the way everybody else seems to be marveling at it, and it's just not doing it. And if he does show up, who in the world is he going to feud with?
Vince McMahon.
Yeah. You go with that. I'll tell you which puppet you're not going to see on Firefly Funhouse. A Shane McMahon puppet, because that'd be the last Firefly Funhouse, because the Shane McMahon puppet would kill the Bray Wyatt character right there on screen. And somehow the Shane McMahon puppet would be like moist, because it'd be sweating so profusely, and it would start out and it would be normal skin, and then it would look like an eggplant by the end. Shane McMahon, best in the world, beats Roman Reigns at Super Showdown. I don't know what to say, folks. I know we didn't watch it, but we just talked about it for the largest part of an hour and saved you the time as well. We will talk to you next week. We'll see what they have on TV. We'll see you.